Welcome to Turning Pages, a series of in-depth conversations with authors about their works.
All right, well, Between the Pipes, a new graphic novel telling the tale of 13-year-old Chafe's life and identity. One of the contributors or creators of the book, Elaine Mordock, who's an associate professor and research affiliate at the College of Nursing here at the University of Manitoba, joins me on the program. Welcome, Elaine.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your interest in this work.
Oh, well, I mean, first of all, local content always high on my priority list, and it doesn't get more local than the campus here at the university. So I guess I want to talk a little bit about your work and how that led you to work with Albert.
Okay. Well, it's a bit of an interesting story, and it's a bit complex, but it's a good story. So I don't know if you remember in around 2016, Cross Lake Community, the Matchemic, apologize if that's not pronounced completely correctly. They had a suicide crisis, which was very sad and tragic. And from that, a group of people at U of M decided to do a suicide prevention workshop. And what that entailed was inviting people from Cross Lake to come down and talk about what they saw as the issues and what they saw as the solutions. And from that, Albert was aware of this. He wasn't at that, but he contacted me shortly afterward, and he said, any discussion that you are having about suicide should include someone who is a two-spirit person. And that's how we met. And that's, we got together and we started talking about the issues that surround being a two-spirit person and a potential risk for suicide.
So from that initial connection then, did you ever envision that something like this would grow out of it?
I wanted something to happen because I was very disturbed when I was reading in the paper for several days there about these suicides that were happening. And I wanted something to happen, but I didn't know what it was going to be. I never thought it was going to be a graphic novel.
So then how did it become a graphic novel? Like at what point is it a conversation that you and Albert have, or at what point does the notion of a graphic novel enter the picture?
Okay, so what happened was we got some funding from the Winnipeg Suicide Prevention Network. They funded us twice for this project, and I'm eternally grateful for that. And we, at one point, had 9 research participants who we interviewed. Well, I should say I interviewed. Albert didn't interview them because he's very influential in the two-spirit community. So ethically, that wasn't seen as an option. So I and some research assistants ended up doing the focus group interviews. And then what happened from that, we had these stories from the heart that really showed a lot of pain, struggle, but also a lot of hope. And the main message was that the participants wanted this research to help other youth of today so they didn't have to go through as much of the hardships, and to let the youth know that there is hope out there. So, and Albert always recognized there wasn't a lot of resources for youth in this position. So over dim sum, we started talking, well, how can we make this youth friendly? And Albert said, well, what about a book? Well, we started thinking about book. And then one of our research assistants said, you know what? I read a lot of comics and I get a lot of information from that. And so the idea just started spiraling from that.
So Albert was thinking of different ways to connect. And then thankfully you had a younger researcher who was a graphic novel fan. And that's how it eventually kind of spins out into this rather than like a text-based piece.
Basically, she called it comics. I mean, she didn't even call it a graphic novel. And so we thought, oh, well, we started investigating that and found out there's a whole other world out there with graphic novels that is getting lots of wonderful messages out to the community.
So if your background is as a researcher and you're, you know, probably used to writing papers or academic prose, Is there a transfer of skills, or did you have to learn like a whole new set of skills to work on something like this?
Well, I think you have to learn new skills, definitely. And also, from our experience, we worked with High Water Press, the publication company, and we needed people to guide us along this, who knew the ins and outs of it, because we didn't really understand all the layers. We knew the message that we wanted to get out, and we had the basic story, but we didn't really have the finesse how to pull it all together. Now, Sonia Ballantyne, who is also listed as one of our co-authors, she had some experience in this and as a filmmaker. So she could provide something. Everybody brought something different to the table, but I would say we were really guided by the High Water team.
Yeah, I was curious because obviously the story by credit, it's Albert, Elaine, and Sonia. Like it reads almost like you would see on like a film credit.
Yes, it does a little bit, doesn't it? And then there's Bart, the beautiful, beautiful art that was done by Ellis R.L. And there's also a letterer who is mentioned sometimes in the credits. But I think you're right. It could be like after a screenplay. There's many players involved.
Right. And so sometimes, you know, maybe the screenplay, from what I understand of like credits, like there's initially like a certain idea maybe one author has, and then they bring in other people to like punch it up or like write the dialogue or these kinds of things. It sounds like more this was the three of you sussing things out together?
Not exactly. Albert and I worked the most on the story. When we reached a certain point, Sonia kind of stepped in to massage certain pieces where the ideas could be conveyed in a graphic novel format.
Okay.
Does that make sense to you, how I'm describing that?
Yeah, almost like an opportunity to kind of like massage things, like a dialogue coach or something?
Well, I think it was more like abstract concepts. Oh. So abstract concepts, like a lot of the internal angst that Chase, the youth who is centered in the book, was feeling. She understood different ways how to portray that visually than we really wouldn't have understood. We didn't really have the mindset and skills to do that. So I think that was a big contribution on her part. And then the artists, we worked with the artists also, and sometimes if the concept or the feeling that we thought, and I mean, Albert and I also had individual ideas of how this should go. What would happen is the art would go back and forth until everybody was kind of satisfied that this is what we were trying to portray. But I have to say one thing, and it's very important. The type of research that this was based on was qualitative research, meaning it was based on the lived experiences of two-spirit people. We had in-depth focus view interviews, and we had three elders who graciously gave us their time and their insights. We had three youth who identified as two-spirit people, and we also had three people who were parents, and they identified as two-spirit parents. So this was like a rich collection of stories, and we kept going back to the themes that came out for that and tried to incorporate them as we could into the story. Plus, we also involved the research participants along the journey, and it was a long journey because we met them in 2018, and the book was just officially published this year in September. We tried to always get feedback from them. This is how the story is developing. What do you think? Is this how you see it? Or is there anything that doesn't look quite right? So it was really a beautiful community effort.
So did you and Albert like sift through some of the qualitative research to see kind of thematic reoccurrence, like things that were brought up by multiple participants in the research to draw threads for this story?
Albert saw the themes after they were developed, mainly because of the ethical reasons that I was telling you before, in case there was any, like, identifying something that was identifying people in the data. So how it worked was he never saw the raw data, but he saw the themes that were developed by myself and one of the research assistants, who were both the research assistants were Indigenous young people. And then we gave them back to the research participants and said, this is what we think we heard. Is this what you said? So they would change things if we missed something or misinterpreted something.
So there was room for them to shape things or provide kind of critical, and I don't mean like criticism, but like critical feedback in terms of shaping things.
Right. What we always call constructive feedback, right?
Right.
Yes, there was. But it was a little bit difficult in some ways because it went on for a long time, like over the years, and people also have other lives that they are pursuing. But we tried to connect as much as possible, and we did have people who were able to follow us and give us feedback all the way through. Not everybody all the time, but we did have it throughout the journey.
So you obviously developed the themes and then gave those to Albert, but then in terms of covering up with the character of Chase and the life that Chase leads, is that Albert? Is that you? Is it the pair of you kind of figuring out who your central character, like how you're going to explore these themes and who you're going to tell them through?
That's an interesting question, because I think one of the things, Albert has been an advocate for Two-Spirit people for many years, plus he has his own lived experience to draw on. So that, of course, did come into the whole melting pot of all of these ideas. This is one story that came out of the data. There's a lot of stories and different ways this could have been handled, but we were trying to look for something that was effective but not shocking, that youth could identify with and could read, and parents could read, and teachers could use it as a vehicle for discussion. So that somewhat melded the context. So I would say, though, I think Albert had a very good idea of putting it within the context of sports, because there is a whole realm of discussion about the different, what would I say, well, elitism in sport, homophobia, racism kind of things. Mm-hmm. So I think it was a really contemporary context to put it in that youth could understand.
Yeah, I did want to ask about that you know, Chase isn't, there's like casual racism and homophobia and bullying happening within the locker room, within the culture of sport. And I was curious about like the intentionality of placing Chase in those circumstances and then having to wrestle with this identity.
Well, I think that the whole context of sports is an arena where sometimes youth have to prove themselves or measure up, or they have a pecking order that they get put in sometimes. So it's basically, I think, an everyday kind of thing that happens within schools and communities. So I see it as a vehicle that provided a sort of a leveling ground where the story developed.
So it gives you a jumping off point.
Can you explain what you mean there? Sorry.
Like that you're thinking, okay, this is something that everyone encounters in this situation. So if we create a character who is within that situation, it can speak to other kids who are ultimately our audience for something like this, because it's something that they like intrinsically understand.
Yeah, I think it's something they see, because I did give this book to my 13-year-old grandson to read, and he didn't think, oh, that never happens. He said, oh, yeah, that stuff happens every day, kind of thing he was talking about. So it's very familiar. And this story is about two spirit youth, which of course is our main thing that we're working with. But I think that the bullying and the pecking order stuff goes on in other contexts also. It's more poignant and more can be more tragic with a youth who's questioning such an integral part of themselves, their sexual identity.
Right, that the 2S LGBTQIA community is especially targeted by this kind of bullying, but the bullying can be, you know, about physical attributes or, you know, skill when it comes to sport or things that, like, there are other bullying that happens.
That's a good way of putting it, yes.
So you mentioned, you know, thinking about, like, teacher's guides and like, you know, using this as a tool. How much of that is in the back of your mind when you're writing the story? Like, are you building it with the thought of it being taught? Or are you looking at the piece after you've written it and figuring out what can be taught out of it?
I think we were building it, thinking what could be taught. And sometimes I think that maybe wasn't consciously, but it was even subconsciously, because we knew the story needed to be told for a reason. Our research participants were very clear that they wanted the message of hope out there, that youth who are struggling with this situation, even if they think there's nobody out there to help them, they have to know that there is somebody. And because each of the research participants told that story of feeling hopeless, but finally some helpers or being able to take advantage of helpers. So this was a very important dominant thread theirs. And we always envisioned this being read by youth. And I think really it was the high water people who said, you know, sometimes when these books are published with a specific youth audience in mind, we make educational guides. And this helps the teacher to be able to use the material. So that's how that developed. And my understanding is the guide will be available in October.
And that's something that Highwater deals with, not you yourself or you and Albert.
Exactly, right. I mean, we could send them ideas, but they actually went to a teacher. I believe it's a person who would identify as a two-spirit person who understood how classroom dynamics work, and that person was involved in making the education guide. Yeah.
So that's a decision out of your hands, but one that I imagine was partly yours, in terms of, like, Chase's personality, that when he's going through this, he's not without fault, right? Like, he behaves poorly to his friends. And I'm curious about kind of, like, was that a conscious thing to not make your central character so heroic or, you know, completely put upon?
I think it was trying to present the reality of what teens are like. I mean, from my knowledge of teens and my memory of teens, I mean, I wasn't always nice to my friends. And I think today that still happens as part of life. I think we were really trying to make him human and to see how this struggle can affect other behaviors that he is involved in.
No, that makes sense. The other thing that I was curious about, and I mean, Albert is an elder, and I was curious about kind of, like, the traditional knowledge interwoven within the book, right? That even the fact that the book ends with a naming ceremony and a sweat lodge, like, that, how important was it to build in tradition and Indigenous knowledge into Chase's story and into this book?
I think it was crucial to do that, because for one important reason is, of the research participants we talked to, all of them identified this as a healing way that helped them on their journey. And this was a crucial way for them to be able to gather their own strength and to validate themselves. However, that journey sometimes was very difficult, because there still can be homophobia within Indigenous communities. So it's sometimes hard to find the correct helpers to take you along the traditional route and to be involved in the ceremonies. But I would say it's a universal message that returning to tradition and ceremonies is helpful to people who are in crisis.
Obviously, yeah, Chase's Kokum plays a central role in his life and in the story. Did the idea for this matriarch come from the two of you, from Albert, from one of you? Like, can you pinpoint kind of how you decided who Chase's family and support system would be?
That's an interesting question because, well, when we were developing it and we went through many different drafts of it, shall we say, one of the things one of the research assistants said to me is, don't portray an Indigenous family in a negative way. Those weren't her exact words, but that was very, very important to her. And I kind of kept that in the back of my mind. We did not want to do that. We wanted to focus on the strength. Albert's personal history is very close with his grandmother. So that was very influential in his thinking. And the Kukum role traditionally, and I think even contemporarily, is a very supportive role and a nurturing role. And we were looking for like realistic ways where Chase could be supported. Now, having said that, I also will interject by saying that not everybody or every youth who is noticing that they are developing as a gay person or a two-spirit person is greeted by family with open arms. Mm-hmm. Was one of the key things that some two-spirit youth have to struggle with, that their family participates in rejecting them and homophobia.
Yeah, I'm certain some of the research participants experience that.
Yeah. But basically, I mean, the idea of a kukum, a grandmotherly figure, I think a lot of it came from Albert's and just the traditional role of that person.
There's a much more contemporary person, a young filmmaker, Dot Footprint.
Yeah. Yes.
That character, where did that come from?
Okay. Well, Albert actually role modeled that on an actual person that is in his circle of friends. And I think it might be in the book, at the back of the book. Or it's written down somewhere, because we had to say that this person, I'm sorry, I don't remember the person's name, but is based on a real identity of a person who embodies the characteristics of Dot Footprint, because we had to acknowledge that she agreed with this.
Oh, you know what? I just found it on the credits page. I hadn't looked quite so closely, but that a likeness as inspiration for the character.
Yes.
Right, because obviously in films and other things, it's like, you know, all these people are a fabrication, but obviously this person was not a complete fabrication.
No. And I love her name, Dot Footprint. That's a great name, too.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you get to play around with naming. Chase obviously, like, suggests, like, a journey that, like, you know, someone who's in pursuit. Was that intentional, too?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Just happenstance?
Yes.
So having done a project like this, like, is this something you'll return to? Like, do you find, you know, that this is a different type of writing and work than I imagine you would typically undergo? Like, is it something that you're interested in exploring in the future?
Well, I think it's a really valuable vehicle for getting ideas out, and ideas based on research that otherwise might not reach the population that you really are trying to assist and provide some kind of hope and resources for. So yes, and when you start looking at graphic novels, there's all kinds of different topics that are being explored in them. So I would say yes, I could see many stories being portrayed in this format, even from our interviews, because there's a lot of stories in there. This is one of them.
Now, I know you'd mentioned, you know, like ethical constraints and research issues. Were there any roadblocks that like you weren't able to overcome or like get around or work through?
I would say no. I think all of the ethical obligations and responsibilities were all valid and safeguards for participants. One of the things that I would like to mention is we did have an elder, the late Velma Orvis, who was there as a support person for any of the research participants. If they felt that in sharing their story, perhaps they were troubled by it and they needed some neutral person to talk to. So Velma Orvis kindly agreed to be that person. And just as a little segue, since she passed on, there's an organization, a resource called Velma's House, which is a safe place for 24/7 for women and gender diverse people. Mm-hmm. And part of the royalties of this book will go to support that.
Well, that's great. I remember when they were on Sherbrooke, just around the corner from where I used to live.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, no, I don't think anything, there weren't really roadblocks. We just had to know what the steps were and then develop the protocol correctly around that.
Between the Pipes, as you mentioned, is already out through High Water Press. Elaine, thanks very much for taking some time to talk about it and congratulations on its release.
Thank you very much and for your interesting questions.